Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Melanie C. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Tuesday, February 21st, 2017. Today we are reading from the Big Book and we are on page 7, starting with paragraph 4 at the bottom. Today's readers are reading the 12 steps, Laura A., The 12 Traditions, Kimberly L. And reading the text today for us will be Rachel W., Eileen M., and Lisa H. The reference number for yesterday, Monday, February 20th, 2017, 7 a.m., is 9613. 9613. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Laura A. to read the 12 steps.
Hi, this is Laura A. for Recovering Compulsive Overeater in New Hampshire. The 12 steps. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thanks for letting me be service, and I pass.
Thank you, Laura A. I will now ask Kimberly L. to please read the 12 traditions.
Good morning. This is Kimberly L., recovering compulsive overeater. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you, Kimberly L., for your service. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone, except the person speaking, should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book on page 7. Paragraph 4 will be the last paragraph, through 3 paragraphs ending with "more wonderful as time passes." The last paragraph on 7 and paragraph 1 on page 8 will be read for context only, and then our comments and focus of study will be on page 8, paragraph 2. And I will ask Rachel W. to please get us started this morning with our study. Good morning.
Good morning, Melanie. Thank you so much for your service. This is Rachel W., recovered compulsive overeater calling from New York. They did not need to tell me. I knew and almost welcomed the idea. It was a devastating blow to my pride. I, who had thought so well of myself and my abilities, of my capacity to surmount obstacles, was cornered at last. Now I was to plunge into the dark, joining that endless procession of sots who had gone on before. I thought of my poor wife. There had been much happiness, after all. What would I not give to make amends? But that was over now. No words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in that bitter morass of self-pity. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master. Trembling, I stepped from the hospital a broken man. Fear sobered me for a bit. Then came the insidious insanity of that first drink. And then on Armistice Day, 1934, I was off again. Everyone became resigned to the certainty that I would have to be shut up somewhere or would stumble along to a miserable end. How dark it is before the dawn. In reality, that was the beginning of my last debauch. I was soon to be catapulted into what I like to call the fourth dimension of existence. I was to know happiness, peace, and usefulness in a way of life that is incredibly more wonderful as time passes. And thank you so much for allowing me to read this today. It's a pleasure and an honor, a privilege to be on the line doing this service. So we're focusing on the paragraph that starts with trembling. And it's so interesting, you know, he mentions Armistice Day. You know, it's when there's finally peace after World War One. You know, whether it's a good reason or what he said before, you know, with issues with the mortgage and the mother-in-law passing away, which some people might find isn't such a bad thing, who knows. But the point is that, you know, it doesn't even matter what's happening in the world. You know, it's just the idea that there will always, as long as my thoughts and my emotions are left unchecked, there will always be a reason to pick up. That thing that's in me that wants to eat, the thing that really it's about wanting to self-destruct. That's really what it is for me. That thing is it's always there. It's always like trying to get in. And for me, it's about aligning myself into these 12 steps because left unchecked, then that's, you know, that's how wars start. You know, it's that emotional upset. I think I'm actually more afraid of my own emotional upset or other people's than anything else, because that's what starts wars. It just takes that emotional upset, and then suddenly someone has a thought, and it's all the willfulness that plays into that, and then suddenly there's a war. So for me, I know that that's my biggest challenge. That's my greatest effort, is to not encounter that emotional upset. You know, to use these steps to stay in alignment, to pick up step one when life feels unmanageable, and to pull the situation through the steps. And you know, just to say that I'm so happy, you know, that we're reading this paragraph, that towards the end, you know, that we're talking about that happiness, the peace, the usefulness. You know, how wonderful it is to go from someone who is just sitting in the dark with every excuse to binge and thinking only of myself, you know, only of the food, only of how can I get my way, you know, and putting the food down and putting the substances down. You know, I had to ask my question, well, who do I become when I don't get my way? You know, what do I do with that emotional upset? And for me, the answer is the steps. You know, that's the only thing that gives me that serenity, that gives me that peace, that gives me that usefulness. And I'm so grateful, because I remember when the World Trade Center, when the planes hit the towers, you know, my answer was to eat a banana. Like, that was my response to the whole situation, to eat, you know. And thank God today I have a different life. Today it's about, you know, my response to life is so much different. And it's directly because of these steps. I live in all 12 of them every single day. I'm really grateful to be on the line today, and I wish everyone a great day, and thank you so much for allowing me to share.
Thank you, Rachel W. And now we'll open it up for a discussion and study on that second paragraph on page 8. Who would like to share on that today?
Harlan G.
Chris
Larry.
G.
Leah D.
Kim G.
Leah D.
From Connecticut.
Okay, this is all I'm going to take for right now, and I'll tell you what I have. And I have Harlan G., Larry K., Tina S., Leah D., Kim G., and Chrissy G., and we'll go with that, and we'll have another round. Hello, Harlan. Good morning.
Hello, Melanie. Good morning, Melanie, and good morning, and thank you not just to you but to Team Tuesday for making this amazing meeting possible. I'm Harlan G., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Scottsdale, Arizona. This is a story within the story. It says, trembling, I step from the hospital, a broken man. This is now the late spring, early summer of 1934. Bill is walking out of the town's hospital for the second of the hospitalizations recounted here in the big book. And he has been told by Silkworth, and Lois has been told by Silkworth, that he is an alcoholic, and that there is really nothing they can do for him. He will die or go mad and get wet brain, and there's nothing they can do for him. And he feels very, very defeated. However, he musters some willpower, and he manages to stay sober until November 11th, 1934. November 11th is Armistice Day. He's going golfing, and he meets a man on a bus line in Brooklyn who is going hunting. And at the end of the line, to the left is a golf course, and to the right is a place where you go shoot guns for targets, and they have some hunting in there, but that's who he meets. He is telling the man on the bus about his alcoholism and that he's been hospitalized, and he starts telling the man all the problems that he's had from alcohol, and the bus breaks down. And they send for another bus. And until the other bus comes, he goes into a cafe with this man. Could you imagine? They're walking into a cafe, he with golf clubs, the other man with a rifle. Could you imagine that today? And they're sitting there, and somebody comes by and says, were you guys in the war? And Bill Wilson says, I was. And the other guy says, I was. And he plops down two whiskeys. With no more thought than the blink of an eye, Bill Wilson downs the whiskey, and the other man says to him, after everything you've told me, how could you drink that? Are you insane? And Bill Wilson's response is, well, it's Armistice Day. let's have another. And I don't have to complete that story. He has to tell Lois that once again, he has drank and he is drunk, and that he never made it to golf, and she actually had saved up a little money to help pay for his golf, and he had money on it. And that was one of the worst things about the whole scenario. But in the end, it's going to prove to be a blessing in disguise, because as it says here, how dark it is before the dawn, and there's a lot of things happening in the background that we don't know about yet. I was soon to be catapulted in what I like to call the fourth dimension of existence. There's height, width, and depth, and the fourth dimension is the dimension of the spirit, the dimension of God, the dimension of recovery. I was to know happiness, peace, and usefulness in a way of life that is incredibly more wonderful as time passes. This is the greatest way of life imaginable. This is the most wonderful program, and this vision for you is the renaissance of that way of life. With that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Harlan G. Larry K.
Melanie, good morning. Can you hear me okay?
I can. Good morning.
Okay, great. Thanks so much. Larry K., recovered compulsive reader from Chicago. Harlan talked about that story, and I've read about that story too. And when that bus broke down, they went into a bar waiting for the replacement bus. And actually, he met this guy, the guy with the rifle, and of course, he had his golf clubs. And he told him he really connected with this gentleman. I mean, he opened up to this guy that he just met like nobody's business. And this guy was very, very impressed with Bill Wilson, who had put the alcohol down for about a month or so at that point. And he was just very impressed with him. And there were some drinks. They were in a bar and at that point waiting for the bus. And he didn't pick up a drink then. It was only, like Harlan said, when they got to the end of the line there and they, there was the golf course and there was the rifle range, and the guy had a little bit of time, and Bill did, before his tea time. And this time, with his newfound friend who was so impressed with him, they sat down to wait at a bar thinking he was fine, and that's when the whiskey was poured and he picked up a drink and he was off and running. See, for me, I never needed any specific excuse. It could be wonderful out. I could be, ready to take the golf clubs out. I could be, or I could be tired, angry, lonely. It doesn't matter. I don't need an excuse. If I have an untreated condition, there will come a day. There will come a day when I'll pick up. But, he talks about being catapulted. And, the thing about it is I didn't know I was going to be catapulted into this fourth dimension. I hadn't planned for it. And it never happened to me up until that time. So how the hell do I know what I'm going to be catapulted in? Indeed, I can tell you today, reflecting back, as Bill reflected back when he wrote this book, that he was catapulted. Yes, indeed, I was catapulted into this dimension. I was, as the result of these steps, I moved from a self-centered existence to a God-centered existence. That's what happened to Bill, but he didn't know it at the time. You don't know how close you may be. Don't wait for the pixie dust to come sprinkling down on you, but I can tell you, if you do the work, if you take the actions, you may be closer than you know. I certainly was, although I didn't know it at the time. When, if we say, wrapping up, if we say, wait, don't leave until the miracle happens, yeah, keep working, keep chopping your wood, keep carrying your buckets of water, do the work, and watch how God effectuates a spiritual awakening on your behalf. Just watch what happens. Don't take your sponsor's word for it. Experience it yourself. With that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Larry K. Tina S.
Thanks, Melanie. Tina S., recovered compulsive eater, anorexic in Florida. Wow, great stuff again. I really relate a lot. I like what it says. I was off again. And on my own, I'm always off again. And I had this happen for me. People around me thought that I would have to be shut up somewhere. I didn't have any family here. I had moved to Florida because that's where the answer was. And I didn't have any family here. And the people around me just didn't know what to do with me. You know, they didn't know what to do with me. And then so how dark it is before the dawn. You know, I didn't know what to do with me. I can remember just praying, dear God, I don't have a clue. And, you know, because I couldn't think, but all I could do was get on my knees and pray. And that certainly was the answer for me. And then I had the opportunity. You know, I had the opportunity. And I liked what Larry said. I don't mean to crosstalk, but, you know, I was soon to be catapulted, you know, but there was stuff that there was work to be done first, and then I was to know a new happiness, peace, and usefulness in a way of life that is incredibly more wonderful as time passes. And that's my experience. And the only way that's my experience is I continue to do the deal one day at a time, whether I want to or not. You know, I remember always being told, Tina, it doesn't matter what you want to do, it matters what you do. And if the best I can do today is to follow a food plan and not be too much into myself, then I have a successful day so that I could do this tomorrow and then, you know, recreate that relationship with a power greater than myself who definitely keeps me sober, abstinent, and sane today. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Tina S. Leah D.
Good morning, it's Leah D. Trembling, I stepped from the kitchen, a broken woman. Fear sobered me a bit. Then came that insidious bite, and I was off again. That line is my life. I would eat until I was sick. I couldn't stop. I would make myself throw up. I'd wash my face and go back into the kitchen and eat again and again and again. And I thought I had to be shut up. And I thought it was the end. And then came the dark before the dawn. Today I can share that I've got 17 months of recovery after spending 41 years in this room with long-term supported dieting. I didn't understand that the must was to learn to work this program line by line exactly the way the book is written. I didn't know. I really thought the people came in 1972 and rewrote it for a new diet club. How wrong I was. And what I am in today is the fourth dimension. What I need to share today is that in order for this group, the group meaning the recovered people, to share, I had to learn how to give it over line by line. Not Leah D's program, the AA program as written through this book. And today what happened is when people call and I share my experience, they don't understand that a food on a food plan could be an allergy food. They don't understand that hunger at 3 o'clock in the morning could be something I ate the night before. I am learning how to recover. I am that sick. I don't understand the basics of just have a little control. I'm a low-level overeater, and I need help, and I'm in recovery today, and I have something to share. That gift came from God. Trembling, I picked up every single time alone. With you, there's hope. Thank you. With that, I'll pass. Great reading.
Thank you, Leah D. Kim G.
Good morning, Melanie. Good morning, all. My name is Kim G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from South Jersey, and I'm going to pick up on that same line that Leah D. just shared on. Fear sobered me for a bit. Then came the insidious insanity of the first drink. And I think this is so appropriate for where we are right now. We're coming up to the end of February. And I have to tell you, the phone calls I'm getting are more desperate because those New Year's resolutions are starting to wear off at this point. And fear sobered people in January. But in February, the insidious insanity of that first bite happened again, and people are in desperation. You know, I get many phone calls that say, I will do anything until I ask them to do something. You know, I had off on Friday a couple weeks ago before going on vacation, or supposed to go on vacation, and I made 5 appointments with people trying to help people out. 4 of them canceled. 4. I only wound up having one person actually call me because the desperation, if not put into action, is not going to create anything. You know, I like to think, what's going to be different about this time with Bill? Because we've seen him in the hospital before. We've seen him have this desperation. And I think of working with others on page 92, where it says, continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of mind and body which accompany it. keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you, the recovered person, you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. And that's the difference. He's going to meet someone who has a solution. You are in a meeting right now which has a solution. You have people who are recovered who can show you the specific, precise path. You know, I often hear, I remember hearing in the room, you have to have someone you can relate to. That's BS. If I could only sponsor people I could relate to, I wouldn't be able to sponsor anybody. I remember hearing in a meeting that drug addicts talked about the fact, yeah, when they wanted drugs, they'd go to any drug addict on the corner. They didn't ask for their resume. But yet when you want a sponsor, you want to have all these qualifications. You know, I have to tell you, if you're looking for a sponsor, I'm going to tell you my opinion is two qualities. You want someone who's absolutely gone through all 12 steps and someone who's had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps. I often hear people say, well, I want someone with a lot of experience and a lot of abstinence. Once again, my opinion, I think the luckiest person is whoever gets to be that first sponsee of someone who recovers. Because there's an excitement you have when you first recover you're never going to have with another sponsee. And I'm going to end with this, that the steps are actions that you do not believe in and you do not want to do. Because your belief in the steps does not affect the fact the steps will work. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Kim G. Chrissy G., you're next.
Hi, I'm Chrissy G. Hi, I'm Chrissy G., recovered in New Jersey. The spiritual awakening for me was the fact that I had an awareness that I was spirit, that I wasn't just body, I wasn't just thoughts and emotions, and I wasn't just, you know, my physical needs. I knew, I didn't realize, I didn't take it seriously that I have a spiritual side of myself. I'm a spiritual being that has to be addressed, and it has needs just like my physical body needs to eat. I thought that, you know, if I do a little prayer in the morning, a little prayer at night, you know, that'd be good. But the disease is a soul sickness and a darkness that needs to be extricated like soul surgery, like spiritual surgery. And it takes a lot of rigorous action for that to happen. It's not a small thing. It's not the spiritual part of the program like I used to think. It is a spiritual program. And I think that that's key. And I think that, you know, it's definitely being talked about this morning, and I talk to a lot of people who say, I just want to feel better, I just want to feel better, I just want to get through the steps so that I could feel better, you know, and a lot of times when I'm working the tools, I feel like crap through it, you know, I'm in jealousy or I'm in insecurity and I'm calling someone up and we're looking at it and we're praying and we're seeing what my part in it is, you know, that whole process doesn't feel great, just like the surgery. And then we know it works because the results come. And that's the whole thing. It's like, I know that the results come, and the addict doesn't like delayed gratification. It wants the instant. I know my disease is like that. But with maturity, spiritual maturity, I've come to see that the work that I put in will have tenfold benefit. So I'm just really, really grateful to be here, and I'll just keep working at it. Thanks.
Thank you, Chrissy G. And before opening it up for additional sharing, a word from our sponsor, a convention promo. A Vision for You presents, dun-da-da-da, The Power of the Big Book, Convention 2017, September 15th through the 17th at Liberty International Airport Marriott, Northern New Jersey. We're going to have this convention on that date. For all things convention, including community bulletin board and contact information for questions, check out our website at www.avisionforyou.com. info. Please spread this good news. And then with that, back to our sharing. Who would like to share on paragraph two on page eight. Hey, Joel.
Leah M.
Melissa C.
Well.
Linda D. from Connecticut.
Jen R.
Rivka A.
Okay, we got some here. Let's see what I have. And I'm going to tell you what I have, a bit out of order, I'm sure. Charles H., Nessa R., Leah M., Melissa C., Du L., Linda D., Jen R., and Rivka A. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, Melanie. Yep. Thank you for that soul surgery in California. It was real good. It was real good. I know about being shut up places. I know how dark it is. You know what? Can I praise God in the hallway while doors are being shut? That's what it means for me. Like, you know what? God woke me up this morning. It's a possibility. I can grow through calamity. I can grow through, you know what, the food is down. Yeah, that's great. But can I be humbled in situations that ain't going my way? You know, thank you, ladies, for showing me about my self-esteem, right? Like, why is my self-esteem affected, right? I had a spiritual awakening in a crack house, I'm going to tell you. Not down to my last 20, but, you know, I knew I was destroying my life, but I knew that God could save me if I seeked him, right? And just like today, like, things are great. I'm praising him in the hallway. I'm screaming hallelujah in the hallway because I could have been dead long ago. Long ago. And I'm just so grateful. Like, Bill W. was like, wow, it was so dark for him, right? I so identify with that. But, of course, he wrote his story after he's recovered, but he had to relate to himself in the midst of it. So he remembers. I remember just like he remembers. He was like, I see that picture online with him with the bandages on his head, and he had that look, and he looked up to the hills and said, thank you, God, for my bottom. Thank you that my bottom wasn't 6 feet under. Oh, I'm praising God in the hallway right now. This is good news that if you're in yourself, if you're in self-pity, because the first paragraph he was in self-pity, now he's rocketed into the fourth dimension because he's in the hallway, right? And doors are closed, but he's in a room and in a place that he is safe and protected. Just shit that flip. And the young lady said it, the soul surgery, man, when you cut out the parts of your heart that's heavy because of other things, because of your self-esteem, oh, God, miracles are possible. And with that, I pass. Thank you, Melanie C., for your service.
Thank you, Charles H. Nessa R. Star One, Nessa R.
Oh, hi, this is Nessa R., recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. Good morning. So this paragraph tells me two things. Number one, that bottom is when you stop digging, because presumably I came into the rooms of OA when I reached my bottom. But, you know, the problem is that I continue on struggling with the food while in the rooms of OA for 9 years. So that tells me that maybe I didn't reach my bottom when I came in. It was just maybe I just was out of ideas and I thought that this will help me lose the weight. And I lived in a state of low-grade misery inside the rooms for 9 more years. And I think that my experience is not unique because I think I've only known one person who've come into the rooms, and I think it was a qualification here on this line on a special edition, who came in, got abstinence, worked the steps, and never looked back. And I think that this chronic relapse problem is not just unique to me. And, you know, when I got to the point where the pain of being in the food was greater than the pain of not being in the food, I was ready. I was ready to tolerate the discomfort
of doing whatever it was that I needed to do in order to get well. And this brings me to the second point, which is that abstinence is not enough. I mean, we see it in Bill's story, in this paragraph. I mean, he was sober for like 6 months at a time, and yet, like the silliest little event, the silliest little excuse would throw him back into the booze, and that was certainly the case for me those 9 years. You know, I was able to get abstinent, but I was never able to keep it for very long. You know, it says in page 19 that the elimination of the drink is but a beginning, meaning that it must be the beginning without which nothing else can happen. But it cannot be the goal. You know, if abstinence is my goal, then I'm not even going to get abstinence. Recovery has to be my goal. You know, a real solution, which for me is a close relationship in alignment with God's will for me, has to be the goal, and that goal can only be attained in my case through the workings of the 12 steps. I mean, it wasn't until Bill was exposed to, I guess, the precursor of the 12 steps that he was able to finally do it, and thank God for that, because without that, I wouldn't be on this line today, and I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Nessa R. Leah M.
Thank you, Mel. Then came the insidious insanity of that first drink. You know, I relate to Bill's story. You know, he has knowledge now. Remember, he met that kind doctor, Dr. William Silkworth, who explained to him that he was bodily and mentally ill, explained to him regarding the allergy. But the knowledge about the disease and its consequences about compulsive overeating was not enough for a real compulsive overeater like me. You know, I stopped hundreds of times because the day came where I didn't want to be obese anymore, where I didn't want to hurt my family anymore, where I didn't want to be lethargic anymore, where I didn't want to spend hours in a dark car in a parking lot binging my brains out until my eyeballs hurt. What I didn't realize was that I had a problem with my mind. Because when I really had had enough of that lifestyle, when I said, that's it, I'm putting the food down, no more, that's it, the end, I'm through, I'm going to be happy now, and everybody around me is going to be happy now, all of a sudden, just like Bill here, I changed my mind, and taking that first bite of binge food seemed like the best idea I had in a long time. I didn't understand the power, the cunning, baffling, and powerful nature of this mental obsession. See, in these kind of situations, I thought I was merely making a decision, merely choosing to change my mind. I think I'm going to have that first bite. But then, through the education of this text and those in whom the problem had solved, I began to see the truth. I was not changing my mind. I was compelled to pick up that first bite beyond my ability to control it. We call it powerlessness. The mental obsession took possession of my mind without my consciousness and without my permission. The interesting thing about mental obsession, it's a thought that would dominate my mind in such a way that it became the only thought. And since it's the only thought, it doesn't know it's the only thought. And if it's the only thought, I can't have the self-reflection that it's the only thought. You see how perverse it is? It's insane. We call that insanity because it's lack of soundness of mind. It's not a whole mind. And it's very, very foolish. Now, what do I do about that? Well, that's what the rest of the steps were for. And until I understood the urgency and the desperation for these steps, I didn't get it. The steps are designed to relieve me of that mental obsession, restore me to sanity, and through taking the 12 steps, I've been relieved of that obsession for food. I don't feel deprived. I've been restored to sanity. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Leah M. Melissa C.
Hi. Good morning, Melanie. Good morning, everyone. It's Melissa C., waking up today in Florida, and, you know, fear sobered him up for a bit. And this is how, you know, it is clear, I think, if you're in the class of the true alcoholic, the real compulsive overeater. You know, if so, then fear could sober you up or get you abstinent for a bit, but it's not going to work long term, you know, because the insidious insanity of the first drink or bite will be your reality. I mean, that is the truth. It will take you over because nothing is stronger than the desire when the desire strikes. You know, it's far stronger than my fear and than my empty promises. You know, insidious, gradual, subtle, and harmful. You know, this is where, when I think about insidious, it's where I can make a small compromise. You know, I'm not going off completely. I'm not going to pick up the cake, you know, but it's an exception, a softening of the strict rules that I swore I was going to follow. You know, it's like my compulsion can change shape to suit the situation. You know, sometimes it's like raging, it's loud, it's forceful, it's screaming. It's like, I don't care, just eat, just eat, just eat. But other times it's been far more subtle, you know, like I think it's like a handsome stalker, you know, it whispers the right sweet words. So I loosen my resolve and it's like I open the door back up to this villain. And, you know, this last bout of bills, just like my last one, you know, that word corruption, destruction of my purity, you know, was eventually, for me, it eventually led me to the place where I was ripe for the transformation, you know, to know happiness, peace, and usefulness. And it does get better as time passes. You know, that beautiful fourth dimension, I recognize in this that for me, the problem is removed. You know, I'm not relying on firm resolutions or fear, you know, or parameters laid down by doctors and sweet promises, but, you know, beautifully recovered and free. And yesterday, I got on a plane last night and, you know, and at some point the plane is in the air, you know, and I think about that as like that fourth dimension. But before then, the wheels are running like crazy on the ground. It's doing this like crazy movement. And I think that's what the steps were. Fast, furious, and then you get catapulted and lifted. And thank you. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Melissa C. Do L.
Good morning. This is Do L. Can I be heard?
Yes. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Thank you. This is Do, recovered compulsive overeater from New York. And I got to say, Leah and the person before Leah hit it right on the spot. This is not about just putting down the food, you know, because we've done that millions of times. I know I did. You know, this is about, you know, putting down the food, yes. And it has to be entire. It can't be just I put down two or three substances and then I keep two or three for myself. It has to be the whole bit. But that's just the beginning because we have this mind that it says it's insidious, insidious insanity. And when you define that word, it's tricky, cunning, sly, seductive, subtle, treacherous thinking. That's what I have. And if that's not addressed through the steps, I will continue to pick up over and over and over and over again. So it's not just coming to OA and say, well, you know, I'm a pretty good person. I can reason. I can read books. I can, you know, I know what my nutritionist says. I know what my doctor says. I know I'm intelligent. I can figure things out by myself. Well, you know what? Figuring things out by myself is what got me into this program because I can't figure things out by myself. I need something greater than myself, and that's what Bill had to get to. He had to get to that bottom of knowing that self-knowledge wasn't going to do it for him. Even fear, even the fact that he was scared that he was going to die and that he was going to be locked up and that he was going to go through all these things that he was already going through, you know, feeling like the world was coming to an end, that didn't help him, you know. So fear, self-knowledge, my thinking that I know better, it's not going to help me. something else has to work in my life. And he says how dark it was before the dawn. And, you know, when I was in Virginia Beach, I saw the darkness, you know, the moon setting. And then, you know, we stayed up all night. And then the sun all of a sudden comes above this horizon. It becomes light. And it just takes away all the darkness. And that's the fourth dimension that Bill gets. But he gets this a month after Armistice Day, which is Labor Day for us. And he gets the recovery in December 11th, a month later, because he hasn't hit his bottom yet. You know, he's still trying to figure things out, you know. And if I could sum up the whole big book in one word, it would be surrender. Surrender to your food. Surrender to a higher power. Surrender to the steps. Surrender, give it up. Give it up and try this, and you'll see that something else can work better in your life. And, you know, and that's what Bill did. Finally, he surrendered. He let go of his conceptions. He let go of his preconceived ideas. And he tried something new that really worked. And it's called 12-step. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Duell. Linda D.
Good morning. It's Linda D. from Connecticut. I've lived everything people have said. I'm recovered for a little over 4 years. I've been in OA since 1982. I did do the dieting with group support. We all did the best we could with what we knew. And so what? So what is, I'm recovered. I'm at peace. So I thought it might be important to share what recovered feels like, because it sounds so daunting, so frightening. It did to me, and it might to you, even if you've been in OA a long time. Recovered feels to me like, wow. I have a center inside that's peaceful. When I look in the mirror, I love who I see. And I love people. And the people I don't like, I can be kind to. It might take a lot of help from some of you because I have to vent feelings and, you know, 10-step and all of that. But it feels absolutely everything that I wanted. Life on life's terms for me is life on God's terms, which for me is love, compassion. Surrender to that. I have no idea how to live in a fourth dimension. It sounds kind of woo-woo when you're new. To me, it's the truth. It's the love. And it's inside me and you. And I didn't know that, but I do now. And I am so grateful. And also, sometime I think I hear, that people, it's the destruction of self. It's the destruction of the false self, the self-destructive Linda. The authentic self is coming out, is emerging with the work of these steps, with the help of a recovered sponsor and all of the recovered people and the folks that, new folks that need help. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Linda D. Jen R.
Hi, it's Jen R. calling. I have a short story from yesterday that really exemplifies the whole idea of the insidious insanity and the benefit that working program does to stop the insidious insanity. I'm living in Maryland now, but I was traveling in Jersey yesterday, and there's a convenience store there called Wawa that has fabulous coffee. And when I lived in Jersey, I used to always go in and get the French vanilla cappuccinos, which are full of sugar. And so yesterday I stopped by to get coffee. And when I went in, I saw the cappuccino machine, and I didn't even think. I just walked over, filled my cup, paid for it, went out to the car, took a tiny sip because it was really hot, and went, oh, my God, this has sugar in it. And because I've been doing hard work in program, God gave me a pause and sanity to to recognize that it has sugar in it and give me the ability to dump out the coffee and not to drink it. And that sounds like a trite saying perhaps to some people, but that's a big deal. The insidious insanity had my head. I was thinking program. I was thinking about program all day. And I was thinking about program when I went into the Wawa to get the coffee. But I just went into autopilot and the fog, and it didn't even occur to me that it had sugar in it until I tasted it. And thank God for this program and working with so many people like I've been doing gave me the connection to my higher power that enabled me to not drink the coffee. And this program has been working wonders for me. I have lost 55 pounds so far in program, and it's all because it actually works, and it's because I'm working with other people. It's anyway, that's all I wanted to say. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Jen R. Rivka A.
Thank you so very much, Melanie. Thank you for your service. Can you hear me? This is Rivka A.
I can, yeah. Good morning.
Thank you again. Good morning. Good morning, all you listeners. My name is Rivka A., recovered compulsive overeater. And, you know, I have so much freedom and happiness about being free from being a slave in bondage to the never-ending story that I always was familiar with, that was always hand-to-mouth, hand-to-mouth. I just want to share on the word miserable. In that paragraph, it says, would stumble along to a miserable end. You know, putting down the food is one thing, but going on stumbling along to a miserable end, you know, that doesn't work for me. You know, I have done that. That's called self-will running riot, running my show plus yours, because I got all kinds of time to give advice to everybody. You know, I think I know everything. You know, control issues is what you want to call it. You know, control, managing everybody else, you know. Miserable, restless, irritable, discontent, think that I have the answers. You know, this is not an overnight process that we're into once we put that food down. We're talking about getting into the step, getting in step with doing the steps, doing the work. You know, that seems kind of daunting in itself, you know, putting pen to paper, getting honest, making a decision, you know, turning my will, my thinking, and my life, my behavior over to the care of something outside myself, something greater than me. You know, I was looking at the promises, and in there it talks about our behavior will convince them more than our words. I can get abstinent. But boy, if my behavior is shouting loud and clear, doing the same thing, demonstrating the same old stuff to the same people, there's no proof there. There's no evidence of the power of God working in my life. I'm still the same old me, doing the same old thing, and stumbling along to a miserable end because I'm not willing to let something greater than myself take control. And I want to end with this. I don't want to take up too much time, but in the 12 steps and 12 traditions of AA, it does say in the foreword, it says that AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature, which, if practiced as a way of life, and we're talking here in that paragraph about I was to know happiness, peace, and a useful and usefulness in a way of life that is incredibly more wonderful as time passes. Well, here in this paragraph, it's saying that this way of life can expel the obsession to drink or compulsive overeat and enable the sufferer, instead of that miserableness, the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. And again, it's going to take a decision on my part, a willingness, daily willingness, to commit my way, my life, my thinking over to something greater than myself, you know, and that takes discipline because we are an undisciplined people. But change we must. And the only thing that does remain the same is change. So, you know, it's like my husband always said, build the bridge and get over it. You know, so for me, it's like, yes, build that bridge of hope within myself, be open, honest, and willing to live in a stream of life and to share and to help another compulsive overeater. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks so much. Rivka A.
Thank you, Rivka A. Thank you very much. And thank you to everyone who shared this morning. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study.
Could
immediately.
You please tell me what the reference number is for yesterday's meeting?
Oh, good morning. Yes, for yesterday's meeting for Monday at 7 a.m. is 9613.
Okay, I just tried that, and they said that was incorrect.
Okay, we'll give it some thought and some activity around that in just a little bit.
Thank you.
Okay. We will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Would Eileen M. please read page 164 for us this morning?
Good morning. This is Eileen M. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from New Hampshire. Our book is
Good morning, Eileen.
Good morning. Thanks. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.